Good morning to Rolina Marks in Israel. Rolina, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning. What can I say? I know I'm going to sound completely cheesy, but I'm feeling the love this morning.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. And happy Valentine's Day to you as well. Obviously, Israel, it goes by unnoticed, I would imagine.
Israel, as you know, we have Tu B'Av, which is around August time. That's our Valentine's Day. But you know us, Howard. Any excuse to factor in something that involves eating.
What, Valentine's Day and eating? How does that work?
Well, for us, Valentine's Day is more about showing the extreme affection that we have for all things calorific. And because we have this lull now between, you know, Sufganiyot and the Osnei Haman, which will come for Purim, we have to fill the void somehow. So in order to celebrate Valentine's Day, we are having Rosalach, which is the invention of Gadi Peleg. He's the owner of Bread's Bakery, and they have several branches, including in America and including right here. But of course, we have to get in on the food action, and instead of stuffing the traditional rugelach with lovely chocolate, they are now filled with marzipan and a little bit of rose water.
That's a very nice. Okay, but we do know, and we've discussed this a few times, marzipan, you either love or you hate. There are a few foods. Marzipan, you love or hate. Licorice.
Marmite.
Yeah, it's true. I was just going to say, I hate Marmite. Don't be ridiculous. But then I realized that's exactly the point. So there's marzipan, there's licorice, there's Marmite, there's other stuff. What are
the
foods?
Yes, pineapples on pizza. That's a very, very polarizing subject.
Also very, very polarizing.
Olives as well.
Mm-hmm.
Olives.
Olives?
Yeah.
Bite your tongue, girl.
No, everybody loves
no,
olives.
No, I love olives, but they're people.
No, everybody does. I've never met somebody that I was prepared to be friendly with who doesn't like olives.
I think if I didn't like olives, my citizenship would be revoked.
Well, that's
how
true.
I stand with you on the Marmite issue. But I have to say, guys, for us, there are certain things where your citizenship will be revoked, and that is a dislike of olives or hummus or cherry tomatoes or shiitake.
The other thing is ginger, actually. I love ginger, and people, you either love ginger or hate ginger.
Well, here we love gingim.
Gingim. Are those people
or
are those?
I love it so much. I make my hair red.
Oh, there we go. Exactly. Alright, let's take a look at some of the other stories, or some of the real stories perhaps that I have taken place or that we want to talk about. Alright, can we just summarize this Hamas situation, the whole balloon thing? Is it because it's Valentine's Day now? Hamas are not sending the balloons over.
Well, I want to believe that this is going to hold, because a few days ago we had word that they had agreed to at least stop the arson balloons coming over the border into Israel, but those still continued. However, last night it was apparent that Israel and Hamas seemed to reach some kind of ceasefire agreement, at least with regards to the balloons and rocket fire. And Hamas being Hamas said that they had decided unilaterally to end this. And this comes after days of extreme harsh language between Hamas and between Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu and Naftali Bennett just days ago, saying that if this continues, Israel will deal a decisive blow to Hamas. They would strike targets like offices, like weapons depots, like personal homes. And we even had word that Yahya Sinwar, the head of Hamas, avoided at all costs negotiations in Egypt because he feared a possible assassination. And Israel have said, you know, all things on the table, and Netanyahu going as far to say that despite us being just a few weeks before our third set of elections, he's not scared to escalate this. And Hamas saying that they don't want an escalation, they don't want any kind of conflagration, but they're not scared of an outright war. So we've had some very, very tense language coming. Hamas even taunting Netanyahu, saying, you know, you're doing this because you're just a caretaker government. We don't take you seriously, and you're in an election cycle. And the Prime Minister Netanyahu not taking that language lying down at all. And yesterday we had the very, very alarming incidents of these arson balloons exploding over elementary schools in Sderot, sending the children running to their shelters. Thank goodness nobody was injured. There was no damage done. But the level of anxiety is horrendous. And having spent quite a bit of time in the South recently, and I really implore people to find somewhere to hear the stories of the people of the South. The levels of PTSD, anxiety, fear and distrust that children are experiencing is too horrible for words. We know balloons as party favors, not as symbols of terror.
And the amazing or the worst part to me about this whole thing, or maybe not the worst, but one of the terrible things is it's just such a waste. It goes full circle because they, Hamas start with these attacks. Israel becomes much, much more difficult and strict in terms of, freedom of movement and all sorts of things. And then Hamas says, okay, fine, we'll stop that if you release those, if you, move back to the position that was, and so it goes on and on.
It's really very, very frustrating. You know, you were talking about the freedom of movement, and this involves work permits that will allow businessmen to travel in and out of Gaza, and restrictions on the nautical miles that where Palestinian or Gaza fishermen are allowed to fish. So, you know, one acts, the one punishes, and it's so futile. It is so frustrating. But there is some good news. Yesterday we had the announcement from WaterGen, which is one of Israel's most celebrated startups. In fact, they made the Times Magazine's 100 list of greatest inventions of all time. WaterGen, who literally, Howard, create water out of thin air with these incredible machines, have announced yesterday that they want to start a pilot in Gaza. They will start
Amazing.
This by...
Wow.
Bringing their machines into that people, they say, regardless of race or religion or creed or whether or not we are in a conflict situation, we want to bring these generators or these machines in to allow for the people of Gaza to have fresh water. And this comes as the COGAT unit, which is the IDF unit responsible for the coordination between the government and the territories. They let in thousands of tons of aid in every day at the backdrop of this horrendous conflict.
Yeah, that's really amazing. I saw this machine operating at the Innovation Center in Tel Aviv, and it is really quite something to see. You know, it's absolutely really remarkable, really incredible. What is also to me absolutely incredible is this brewing, you know, Valentine's relationship between Israel and Saudi.
Isn't it incredible? I mean, we've just, you know, we're starting to hear nearly on a daily basis the Arab world opening up to Israel. We spoke, I think, last week about the fact that Dubai has said, you know, that they would welcome Israeli tourists with Israeli passports long after the expo this year is finished. About 2 days ago, we heard from the United Arab Emirates saying that they would really, really encourage investment and an Israeli reciprocating by saying, you know, if you want investment, we're more than happy to facilitate that. You know, let's talk how we can improve the region. We've heard from a former Qatari prime minister this week that Israel and Gulf states and possibly Morocco are entering into a mutual non-aggression pact. That's extremely, extremely significant. And now we have a great warming of ties starting between Israel and the Saudis. The other day it was announced by the U.S. Secretary of State, Mark Pompeo, that between Jerusalem, Riyadh, and Washington, they are trying to organize a summit to take place in Cairo just before the elections, where a Saudi delegation, an Israeli delegation will sit down possibly for the first time, and also announcements coming out of New York today that a delegation of members from the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, try putting that on a business card.
Yeah.
Which is an umbrella body for U.S. Jews and their leadership. They are going to be visiting Saudi Arabia. They are going to be looking at ways to increase ties between Saudi Arabia and Israel. And also, we've heard on social media the religious delegation that went to Auschwitz just a few weeks ago. You and I spoke about how incredible it was just to see those pictures. And the Saudi bloggers that have visited Israel and have fallen in love with the country. So it looks like the winds are blowing through the Middle East, and the Saudis also warning the Palestinians, you better start thinking of peace, you better start looking at peace proposals, otherwise it's going to be too late and you are going to miss out.
Lawrence says a warning, it's just something to remember, that your enemy's enemy is your friend. In other words, this is also Iran related. It is good.
We know that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's pretty well, I don't think there's any secret around that, but I think as long as there's movement in the right direction for whatever reason, I think we'll take it. Peace is never a bad thing, or very rarely a bad thing. All right, before we move to the next topic that we want to talk about, I'm just trying to find the message, but I think this was exactly right. Barbara says coriander is also one of those we can add to the list.
Yes,
so we've got marzipan, marmite,
yeah,
ginger, olives, pizza, a pineapple pizza, and definitely coriander. I have to say that I am a bit of a coriander hater, but I think it depends. You've got to use the right amount, otherwise it just it becomes chaotic. You had an interesting approach this week to talk about the UN blacklist, and or the not the UN, but the United Nations Human Rights Council blacklist, which is not quite the same thing. But you were approached in an interesting way, and I want to just talk about that. Give us some context here.
Okay, so to put everybody in the picture, I was approached by an international news network if I would come on and be a neutral commentator on the UN blacklist. And just to recap, this is the blacklist that was announced by the UN Human Rights Council the other day of 112 companies operating in the disputed Judean Samaria or West Bank, whatever you decide to call them. I just want to be clear, it's not a blacklist of Israel and all Israeli companies, and also only 65 of the companies on this list are Israeli. There are international companies, some French, some Dutch, some American as well. But they asked me if I would be neutral. And my response to them was, unfortunately, in this case, I cannot be neutral, and I don't think they're going to find anybody who can be neutral on an issue that is so profoundly painful to the Jewish people and to Israel, to the state of Israel, but is so completely polarizing as well. This list was made in conjunction with pro-BDS organizations. It was a result of a resolution put forward at the United Nations in March 2016 by countries that are the last to be talking human rights. We're talking countries like Bolivia and Venezuela and Pakistan. Again, it's this obsession that the United Nations has with Israel, but also glaringly obvious to all of us is the fact that, again, Jews, businesses that deal with Jews are once again blacklisted, labeled. It's profoundly anti-Semitic. And to quote our president, it takes us back to the darkest time in our history.
Yeah, and it is a fascinating conversation, because can we ever really be neutral? Can anybody? And the problem is that if you do pretend to be, it's problematic because we've all got our view, we've all got our biases, and we all feel very, or most people feel very strongly on these issues. So I find it quite fascinating because it's hard to find a news service or a news outlet that isn't agenda-driven to some extent. And I think it's time we almost let that go.
This particular news outlet, and I'm not going to say who it is extremely agenda driven, which is why, you know, I was prompted to tell them that, you know, you can't be neutral in this case. You know, as journalists, we try and keep a line where we attempt to be as balanced as possible, but there are stories, there are issues that come across the desk every now and then where, you know, if you do a lot of analysis, you actually have to take a stand. And this one was one of those cases.
Very, very interesting. I'd love your thoughts on that. 34519 or 061-895-1019. I assume you didn't ultimately do the report.
Absolutely not.
All right. What do you think of that? What do you think of Rolene's choice? Should she have said she will be neutral and then gone on? Or should she have done exactly what she did? But by doing so, perhaps allow somebody who says that they're neutral, but is maybe perhaps has a bit of an anti-Israel bias. What do you think how do you think that could or should have been?